Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's Connecting Faith. Appreciate your company and looking forward to a good conversation today, as we do every day, really. It's always good to have opportunity to address important issues with a faith perspective. How do we look at the world from a biblical perspective? How do we apply biblical principles to daily life? That's what we like to accomplish here day by day on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross Controls, and Carissa's there on the phone. Looking forward to welcoming your call, our guest today. We've got several copies of his book to give away. I think you'll find it a good resource. Ted, I don't know if you've had situations where, maybe you're just watching the news or reading something, or you just sense, boy, there's a real bias toward Christianity there. I mean, there's, we can overreact sometimes, but mm-hmm. there's other times when it's like, well, that's clearly, someone misinterpreting or misrepresenting or just flat out, lying about the story.
Yeah, it can be disheartening sometimes, especially when you hear a tolerance for almost everything else but Christianity. It can be frustrating.
When you call it the lamestream media, is that what we're going to talk? Yeah. We're going to talk about that today, but it might come up because today we're going to talk about understanding and responding to anti-Christian bias, and that is the subtitle of a wonderful new resource called Hostile Environment, and it represents a good deal of study and research from our guest today, George Yancey. George is a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. And specializing in race, ethnicity, biracial families, and anti-Christian bias. He is the co-editor of books such as Compromising Scholarship, Religious and Political Bias in American Higher Education, Dehumanizing Christians, Cultural Competition in a Multicultural World, There is No God, Atheists in America, Beyond Black and White, Beyond Racial Gridlock, and Just Don't Marry One. That's one of his as well. And this one, his latest from University Press, called Hostile Environment. George, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for having me.
This is one of those topics where I think we just want to, I think we all have a sense that something's going on, but maybe to what extent. And I know you've kind of started to explore this phenomena, this animosity against Christians. You've even coined a phrase. Let's start with definitions and what we're talking about.
Well, actually, I didn't coin the phrase Christianophobia. I found it, but I think it's the best one that works at this current time. And the basic definition of it is unreasonable level of anger or hatred or fear towards Christians. And in the United States, we find that that's more so the case against conservative Christians. They're the ones who tend to be the recipient of that unreasonable level of anger, fear, or hatred.
And, I guess there's always going to be disagreements, but as you said, this has gone past that to the point of unreasonable. Tell me a little bit about, did you do some extensive research just in kind of setting up how to determine how much of this is going on?
Well, I wanted to do quantitative and qualitative research. And qualitative research is when you actually have people talk about how they feel about things. And we did that through online questionnaire with open-ended questions. But quantitatively, I wanted to see, how much animosity there is towards Christians, conservative Christians in general. And I used a survey, and what I found out is that the religious group that has the most animosity is atheists. They face the most. The second religious is Christian fundamentalists. And a lot of people really define Christian fundamentalists as conservative Christians. They actually have about as much animosity towards them as there is towards Muslims. So when in our society talks about Islamophobia and Islamic hatred, and of course that is a problem that is out there, but you don't find a lot of people in our culture talking about anti-Christian bias and anti-Christian hatred, which I also have documented out there as well.
The book we're referencing is called Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. We've got five copies to give away. We'd love to have you joining the conversation. You can sign up for one as we do each time we have resources. We give them away as a drawing at the end of the hour. 877-933-2484 is the number. 877-93-FAITH. George, I know you've written a lot on racial discrimination and bias, and also some things on anti-Semitism. Is there are parallels between, say, anti-Semitism and this growing antagonism toward Christians?
Well, anti-Semitism is interesting. It too is an anti-religious bias, and of course there are some similarities and some differences. I think today the key difference is that when you talk about anti-Semitism, you're talking probably about a smaller group, and a group that probably today, now this hasn't been true historically, of course, but today is relatively not very powerful. Whereas when you talk about anti-Christian bias, you're talking about a group that's larger, and I didn't mention this before, but they also tend to be wealthy, white, highly educated males. So they're people with power. Where they're similar is that when you talk to people who are anti-Semite and people who are anti-Christian or Christianophobia, you're talking about people who see religion, whether it's Jewish religion or Christian religion, as a threat to take over society. And so when I was coding some of the data from my qualitative study, a lot of people were talking about a theocracy, that Christians want to have a theocracy and take over the world that way, or take over the United States that way. In anti-Semitism, they talk about the Illuminati and you know, how Jews are taking over the banks. So that is kind of similar. How it manifests itself, though, is a little bit different.
It is interesting that this has been growing. Would you say this is just in the last few years? Is it the last 10 years? Are we looking at, has this been ongoing for hundreds of years?
It's hard to know in the United States how much it's grown, because there's not been any longitudinal work. Because of some of the biases in academia, there's not been much of an incentive to look at anti-Christian bias or perspectives. I suspect that it has gone up over the last, say, 10 years or so. It could be over the last 15 years, over the last 5 years. I suspect it has gone up. I suspect that it's also tied to a larger issue of conflict between science and religion, that some people argue that, that they must be in conflict with one another. So those are some of the things I suspect, but I don't have the sort of data to say, oh, yes, I know starting in 2003, there's a seeing a spike in Christianophobia.
Well, you, of course, are in the midst of higher education as a professor of sociology at University of North Texas, and you've written about that in terms of religious and political bias in education. So is this a product, essentially, of an education system that's worked hard at keeping Christian influence out of it? And so we're just sort of seeing the fruits of those, 30, 40 years of labor?
I would suggest there's multiple factors, but that is one of them. I would suggest that, part of it, it's happened, education has evolved a certain way to where there's less emphasis on religion, religious values, and Christianity being the dominant religion. Part of it also is that Christians have tended to not enter higher education. I know that part of it is because there are certain barriers that are there, but part of it is Christians have chosen not to. And so in some ways, we Christians have created an environment in education, and I would also argue in the arts, in entertainment, in the media, where we're not present enough so that people can develop these stereotypes and these images of Christians, which I believe are inaccurate, but they can use those then to fuel their Christianophobia.
Well, say more about that. Is this simply a matter of the stereotypes developed because come in contact with the people of the Christian faith, for example, if we're have phobias toward them?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, there's a tradition of theory known as contact hypothesis, and it's developed a lot in race and ethnicity. But I think it does apply here, that when you have people who don't come in contact with Christians, then it becomes a lot easier to develop the sort of stereotypes that we have, the stereotypes I document in my book as far as Christians being not very smart, easily led, being anti-science, and these sort of stereotypes. It's easier to develop them if you don't have Christians or in your social networks.
We talk. It's one thing about talk about hostility and bias. It's another thing to talk about persecution. I mean, clearly there are places in around the globe where there's persecution taking place. But would you say that in America, Christianity is their persecution is here in our country? Or in what ways do we define, I guess, distinguish between bias and hostility to persecution?
Yeah, my understanding of persecution is when people punish you directly because you have a certain belief. So, yes, in many parts of the country, in the Middle East, for example, we're finding more and more Christians are being put in jail, being killed, having their churches burned, simply because they're Christians, no other reason. I would not define what's happening in the United States as persecution of Christians. I would argue that, yes, there is discrimination, and at times there is mistreatment, but I would not use the persecution word because I think it kind of belittles some of the real horrors that we see around the world.
We're going to talk more about the world in which we live today in the United States. And in many ways, it is a hostile environment. That is the title of George Yancey's latest book, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias, Hostile Environment. So we will get to some of those answers. How do we understand and respond to the culture in which we live, the dominant culture? Is it something where we simply just quietly take it? Is it just a matter of turning the other cheek? You know, have we brought some of these issues on ourselves? What do we do to get a place at the table to break down some of those stereotypes? All that and more coming up with George Yancey. George is professor of sociology at the University of North Texas and is our guest today. He's written a couple of books, including Compromising Scholarship, Religious and Political Bias in American Higher Education. We'll talk more about hostile environment here in just a moment. We do have some copies to give away, too, and would love to give you a chance to enter your name in for that. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. You might have experienced some bias and hostility. We'd be interested in hearing your story, your perspective, and maybe find out how you handle it, or if you have a question about what you could do if you're in an environment right now where there doesn't seem to be much appreciation for your faith. Let us know. Join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's 18 past the hour, and we're learning today more about how we can stand in today's culture that has a decidedly antagonistic or maybe even hostile perspective to our faith, particularly those that profess a conservative Christianity. It does seem like we get labeled, and there is no question there is an anti-Christian bias to one level or another in our country. And I guess in some ways that shouldn't be surprising, and yet we haven't had to deal with that for a long time. So we're learning together as we go. We're talking hostile environment. That's the title of the new book from Professor George Yancey, who serves as a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. And he specializes in race and ethnicity, biracial families, anti-Christian bias. And this book has a lot of great research in it and a lot of good insight and advice. And George, I know that you've written Beyond Racial Gridlock. Are there connections between racial discrimination and anti-Christian bias?
Well, what I would say is that whenever you're talking about a bias or a prejudice or something like that, there are certain things that are almost always there. I mean, hatred and certain types of stereotyping that tends to be there. And so you can say, in that case, you can say there's similarities between racism and Christianophobia. But racism is quite different in that racism is based more on some belief of physical difference. There's more violence in racism. I mean, we have a history of racial violence that we really don't have as far as Christianophobia here in the United States. And I would also point out that who is racist tends to be different than who has Christianophobia. People who tend to be racist, at least in today's society, are less likely to be educated. They are they're obviously more likely to be white as far as non-white if we're looking at racism against people of color. So you have a different group of people. Generally speaking, people who are racist per capita are not as powerful as people who are Christianophobic. And so we have to be careful about making these direct comparisons.
But you talked to reference that before, that we're dealing with here those that are Christian phobia are phobics are people with power generally, right?
Yeah. Well, I would say that is their per capita power. Because of the nature of the data, we don't know just how big this group is, but we do know that when there is animosity towards Christians, it tends to be people who per person, they tend to have quite a bit of power.
Because they're coming out of education, law, media, those kinds of things?
Well, if you think about it, you know, if you're talking about population in the United States that is wealthy, that is educated, that is white, that is male, as a sociologist, those criteria are what we a lot of times look at for stratification, and those are all what we call majority group status. Those are the people who tend to be more powerful than others. And so if you told me there's a group of people who are white males who are highly educated and wealthy, I'm going to just, without knowing anything else, tell you that that's probably a pretty powerful group of individuals, depending on the size of the group.
Yeah. If this is, you know, if the primary sources kind of are in academia and media, I mean, how likely is it that the general public is going to become aware of these hostilities? I mean, is there a way that we can make our case? I mean, as you said, academia hasn't been too interested in pursuing this as a study. Media, you know, only points out, I guess, the worst of us. So is there a way to make our case?
It's going to be pretty difficult for those very reasons. That the culture at this point is not something that Christians have a lot of control in. When I talk about the culture, I talk about the media, I talk about academia, and I talk about entertainment, that I suspect there's a lot of Christianophobia there, and, of course, people with that are less likely to identify. And so I know the challenge Christians have. I think one of the reasons why I wrote this book is I think that we Christians, because I am a Christian, we Christians have to consider what our next steps are going to be and how we're going to move forward in an environment that's not going to be friendly to us.
We'll talk more about that in a moment, but maybe just to respond to the question, and I know you address in the book, I mean, have we brought this on ourselves, or is that a viewpoint that, phobes would like us to believe?
Well, anytime you're talking about a group of people, there's going to be some people who do not act appropriately. And clearly among Christians, there are things that have been done by individuals, and there are some things in our institutions that we do need to clean up. And I've written on racial issues, and I've written about what Christians need to do on racial issues in order to be better at it. Having said that, whenever you have sort of prejudice and stereotyping that people, that is as toxic as many of the individuals, the response to my samples exhibited, it's hard to make the case that Christians deserve all of that. For example, in one of my academic books, talking about so many Christians, so few lions, people joked about feeding Christians a lion, which is essentially joking about torturing people to death. I don't know what Christians have done to deserve to being joked about being tortured to death. So I would argue that you can always make the case that some of this anger and some fear is deserved. I don't think you can make the case that all of it is deserved.
Would there be any other sort of similarity in culture where, one group is we're as hostile to a group? And I assume that we have to be honest and that this is based on issues of morality, right? That is what sort of separates those that are most phobic, perhaps.
Well, I do think that's part of it. I think part of it is that the different view on what is moral, what is good, the people with Christianophobia have, as opposed to people who are more conservative Christians. I also think there's a power dynamic there, that when you look at people who tend to have Christianophobia, that in some ways Christians may threaten some of the power that they may want, perhaps cultural power, perhaps financial power. And when people are threatened, they try to find ways to put down the groups that they feel threatened by. So I do think that there's a dynamic there as well.
Barbara in Cottage Grove said, we ought to be fearful, but we should have terrorist phobia. There are, terrorists in our communities connected to Al-Shabaab or whatever. You talk about in the book that there's some that equate Christian conservatism with Islamic terrorism.
There are some that do. There are some that argue that, that Christianity is just the jihad, only it's the Christian version of the jihad. that Christians wanted to do to the United States what Muslims have done to other countries. So there are some, and that to me is part of the unreasonable fear. As a sociologist, I always try to put myself in the place of other individuals. So I understand that people don't like Christians, don't like some of what they stand for, and such a thing of this nature. But when I look at Christian political activism, I see people who are trying to do what other people are doing, which is to push forth the issues that they consider are important and to they want their issues to win out. To me, that's what people who are active in politics do. I don't think Christians are any more likely than anyone else to want to take over the United States and enforce a theocracy on the rest of the people in the United States. I see tendencies of that among some Christians, yes, but among some people who are not Christians as well. So that's part of this unreasonable level of fear that is out there, that Christians are going to take over, they're going to force everyone in the churches, and they're going to force the theocracy on folks. And the most extreme sense is that if they have Christians have the power, they would kill people who did not believe what they believe.
We shake our heads at it, but the fact is that it's out there. You mentioned the science. That's another area, right? Are there sort of maybe a handful or a two or three that seem to be main areas of concern in terms of the phobia, that the hostility that's out there? It's, the idea that we want theocracy. That's one. Now, what would be a couple others?
Well, there's the theocracy. There's anti-science part of this, that they believe Christians want to take science out and replace it with religion. And thus, this is one of the reasons why you see the fights over evolution that are so toxic in our society. There's the fear that Christians are being led by these evil leaders, and so you have a lot of people who are not very smart, who can't critically think, being led by these evil leaders, and that is the dynamic what's happening with religion. And so for some of the individuals, they want to see religion and Christianity go away because they have, in their minds, corrupt the minds of other individuals. It also motivates some of the movement of people with Christianophobia to try to push Christians out of the public square, and that came out in some of the comments of some of my respondents, and I think you can see that in some of our public issues today, that there's this movement to, if you want to be a Christian, you can be a Christian in your home, in your church, and really nowhere else.
Well, we live in a heated cultural environment, and maybe you've heard comments close to this, the only good Christian is a dead Christian. We just shake our heads at that, but that is the world in which we have come to, and we're talking about how do we respond, understand and respond to anti-Christian bias in today's environment. Hostile Environment is the title of the book from George Yancey. George is professor of sociology at the University of North Texas and has written extensively on issues of education and race and faith. And we're talking with George. We've got some copies of this book to give away. You're welcome to sign up for that and join the conversation with a phone call. It's 877-933-2484. Call us at 877-93-FAITH. Sign up for a copy of the book and join the conversation. More with George Yancey in just a moment.
Keep fighting.
Well, talk about that. How do we keep fighting the good fight and let our light shine? We've had many years of favor in our nation. Of course, our heritage as the United States of America goes back to founding fathers that understood the hand of providence. And so it's been part of our way of life. And now it seems like there's a growing antagonism and an intense animosity and perhaps even hatred against the Christians and the Christian faith. And we are, in fact, talking about actually the phobia of those that are unreasonable in their anger and upset, being upset about it. Christian phobia is a topic we're talking about today as we reflect on Hostile Environment. That's the title of George Yancey's book. It's a new book out from University Press. The subtitle is Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. And we got some copies to give away if you'd like to read more about it, or if you've experienced it in some ways in your workplace, in your neighborhood, at school perhaps. Love to hear your story. If you have a question about it, maybe how that you could respond in a situation that you're facing, you can join us at 877 933 2484, 877-93-FAITH. So we want to talk a little about how we respond, George, but I'm wondering if we, you know, do we look at just turning the other cheek? Is that really our primary way that, or do we have to take a stand on some issues?
Yeah, you know, that's a difficult question that we have to ask because we're Christians, we have to approach this in a Christ-like manner. And you know, we have to think about, you know, when you turn the other cheek and when do you fight? I'm not a believer that what we do is just simply capitulate, because my belief is if we simply capitulate, it will not stop where it's at right now. It'll keep going. For the people who have Christianophobia, if you have this fear that Christians are trying to take over the world and set up a theocracy, then it becomes quite easy for you to justify doing things that are wrong. So I don't think capitulation in and of itself is the solution. What I do think is that we have to weigh when we're going to fight and when we're not going to fight. And I think the way to weigh it is this a larger principle, or is it just that your feelings are hurt? If there's a larger principle, then sometimes we're going to have to take stands that are uncomfortable, but still fight for them. If it's just that your feelings are hurt, you may want to think, do you really want to create a fight with another individual simply because your feelings are hurt? So, you know, there's no one right answer for all situations as to how we should address this. I do think that we as Christians have to begin to infiltrate some of the cultural institutions that we've sort of left behind. That means we have to have Christians not just in Christian colleges teaching, but in secular colleges teaching. Not just in Christian media, but in secular media. And not necessarily to do Christian things, but just to be a presence and a voice there, so that we can challenge some of these misconceptions, some of these cultural ideas that have developed in our society. So it's a long battle. I don't think we're going to, you know, people are looking for a quick victory. I think they're going to be disappointed. I think we're going to have to persist and maybe generational. But I do think that is a battle that we're going to have to engage in.
And you talk about infiltrating, you know, education and media and the arts, some of these places, but isn't that, you said, maybe just expand more on that, because that is one of the unreasonable fears, right, is that that Christians are moving into these areas in an effort to overthrow or to change, you know, the way things are, right?
Yeah, we need to move these areas, and I wouldn't use the term overthrow. I would say at this point we want to place the table. My belief is that, you know, if Christians really live out our lives and live according to what Christ wants, over time people are going to see that. And over time we can have a huge influence. But what we have to do is protect ourselves to a certain degree. We have to protect our community so that we can support one another and really have a Christian community here in the United States. And so we can't abandon politics. We can't abandon activism. But we have to be smarter about it. I fear a lot of Christians think that we just let the right person as president of the United States, they'll solve all of this. And from what I see in the culture and what I see in happening in our society, that's not going to solve this problem. Consistent Christian presence, where we truly live out our faith and truly live out what we believe, I think in the long term can mitigate a lot of this hostility.
So if we just maybe approach it in nonverbal ways, as opposed, you know, we could be silent, but we're going to have influence on our society by serving. Is that that's not enough? You'd say, though, right?
Right. I mean, we should serve. I mean, I think we really need to concentrate on serving, giving to others. If we concentrate on just political power, that, you know, we're no better than anyone else. But I would suggest that we should think about our political goals a little bit more tactically. That what we have to do is preserve, at least at this point of our history, preserve who we are and protect ourselves, and then allow our community to flourish. And I think if we, you know, and this is something I've been thinking about, that, you know, in the larger society, there's a lot of individualism, a lot of people, you know, and that really drives a lot of the activism we see there. Whereas if we as Christians really, really practice loving one another and develop a community in that way, that's going to be attractive in and of itself. Now, to do that, I do believe that we're going to have to engage society, sometimes politically, to protect ourselves. But I don't think that we can just engage with political strength and hope to change society that way.
George Yancey is my guest today, professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. He's authored a fascinating book called Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. I'm going to take Bob's call. Bob's listening to Faith Radio in Shoreview and has a question about misconceptions. Bob, you're on with George Yancey. Go ahead.
Yes. The Bible clearly teaches that there are true Christians and false Christians. How much do you think these negative reactions are a result of just a misunderstanding of what a true Christian is really like? You know, a negative reaction to the poor examples of Christians, the false Christians.
George, what do you think?
Well, I think that's some of it. You know, there are Christians, there are people who say they're Christians and then act in a very unchristlike manner. So I do think, you know, and one of the complaints some of my respondents have is how Christians are hypocrites. How, and they'll have a story of a person who's in church every day and yet they know is sleeping with his neighbor's wife or something of that nature. So obviously that is an issue. However, even if we acted perfectly the way, and of course we're not going to be perfect this side of heaven, but even if we really lived our Christian life, there still would be hostility. I'm convinced that there still would be hostility towards Christians. So it does explain some of the hostility, but it does not explain all of it.
I know you you just touched on it briefly, but the area of homosexuality, which seems to, well, I guess basically anything related to sexual preferences or morals that, you know, it really represents, it seems like kind of a, not a large portion of the population, but it has pushed its way to the top of the cultural agenda. I mean, are you surprised maybe that this has become such a hot button issue?
Well, I guess if you had asked me like 10 years ago, I would be. But, you know, today, of course, I'm not, because I've watched this issue bubble up and build up over time. And that, you know, this is a good example of, you know, even if Christians live out what they believe, you know, people who are very supportive of homosexuality are still going to have a certain amount of hostility towards Christians because they disagree with Christians on the whole issue of homosexuality and same-sex marriage and things of this nature. So there is going to be hostility regardless, even if we truly live out our values. But I do believe that if we truly live out our values, there would be less hostility because you would have fewer individuals who are acting in, I guess what you have to say, in unchristlike ways.
So as you've, you know, researched and talked about it and considered it, are there some areas in which, you know, we're going to just have to compromise and give up some of our positions in an effort to find common ground? Because I know you do talk about, you know, ways that we can work together and find solutions that ultimately we want to find some common ground. Is there, you know, do we win the battle and lose the war, or do we lose the battle in effort to win the war?
Well, you know, I would suggest that Christians, you know, whether or not we've ever been a Christian nation or not, that at this point in time, Christians just have to accept that we're not a Christian nation and that we're not going to, you know, at this point in time, I don't think it's realistic to think that we're going to have a Christian culture no matter what we do in the short term. Now, you know, maybe long term, that may change over time. But when we look at what's happening, you know, we look at what's happening in the media and we look at what's happening in other areas of our society, that's not going to happen. And since that's not going to happen, you know, we're going to see patterns, lifestyle patterns. We're going to see actions that, you know, we may not like as Christians, but we're going to have to accept that they're out there and that they're going to be a dominant part of our culture at this point in time. So, yes, there are things that Christians are going to have to just simply accept as reality, unless God decides to change it, that this is what reality is in the United States at this point in time. The whole same-sex marriage debate, as far as whether or not we're going to have same-sex marriage, I think a lot of Christians who are struggling with that are going to have to accept that that's the reality at this point in time, that fighting to reverse same-sex marriage at this point in time simply, in my opinion, does not make any sense. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not telling those Christians that they're wrong for feeling the way they are, but I'm just saying that, you know, the reality is that that's what's happened at this point in time of our history.
You did talk about preserving some of our beliefs. I guess maybe say more about that. I mean, what That's always hard to know, I guess, isn't it? How do we protect the beliefs? How do we protect the maybe the freedoms that we already have? Because ultimately, I guess this will probably lead to a loss of freedom, right? As antagonism and animosity increases, loss of freedom, it seemed like would be coming our way, and it may be not overt but covert as well, right? Just you not be allowed to advance in your field of study or something, for example, in higher education.
Yeah, I do think that religious freedom is going to be an important issue that Christians are going to have to look towards. And a lot of individuals who I strongly suspect don't like Christians and want to use certain issues to limit Christians are going to try to do that, and they're going to speak against religious freedom for the sake of some other issue. One thing that I hadn't really mentioned is people of Christianophobia don't tend to overtly say we're gonna punish you because you're a Christian. What they do is that they find an issue where you could justify treating people differently, and base it on something other than Christian bigotry. And I'll give you a great example. On certain college campuses, Vanderbilt, Bowdoin College, Christian organizations have been kicked off those campuses because those campuses passed a rule saying that your student organization must be open, the leadership must be open to people of any faith. So if you're in a varsity and you want to say, no, our leaders must be Christian, those campuses have said, no, that you can't do that. On the surface, this seems religiously neutral. The reality is, and you know, I've dug into this a little bit, so I have reasons for stating this. I honestly believe that a lot of these individuals did not want Christian organizations on their campus, or if they did, they wanted them to be muted, and this was a way of doing that. And you can say, well, we're not targeting you because you're a Christian. We're targeting you because you're not following our rules. I strongly suspect that this rule was used against, say, because a feminist organization, say that they must have certain individuals who don't believe in feminism in their leadership. It would not have passed.
Have you experienced it personally as a you're on a university, a secular university campus, you're a Christian? Does that, is your faith challenged maybe, or are you marginalized in some ways?
Well, you know, I'll say that I've had some experiences at a low level as I was moving up through the ranks. Today I have tenure. I'm a full professor. I'm not saying that it's impossible to get rid of a tenured full professor, but it's quite hard. And I have a good record. I've published, I do my teaching. So it'd be very difficult to punish me indirectly at this point. But yeah, I've had a couple of times when I was a graduate student and when I was an adjunct professor where issues came up and I experienced a little bit of this pushback. And I've talked with other Christians in academia who've experienced this pushback as well.
Yeah, as you said, it may just be sort of covert, but to justify behavior, and it sounds good on the surface, I guess, doesn't it?
Right. It's what we call symbolic racism when it's done with racial issues. And so I guess you could say this is symbolic Christianophobia, where you find an issue where you can punish Christians, but you have some sort of rationale that's not based on religious bigotry.
George Yancey is a PhD at the University of Texas and professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, specializing in race, ethnicity, biracial families, and anti-Christian bias. He's authored several books. The one we're referencing today is his latest. It's called Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. It's published by University Press. We got some copies to give away. If you'd like to join the conversation or sign up for a copy of the book, you'll find it important reading and good insight as well as we think about how we work our way through some of these challenges in today's culture. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. If you'd like to drop us a note, you can do that as well as myfaithradio.com. Then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. It's more convenient to just drop a note. You can do that, myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. And we'll talk more with George Yancey in a moment.
Stand up for Jesus, you soul. origins of the cross. Lift high his royal banner. It must not suffer loss. From victory.
10 minutes before the hour, talking today with George Yancey, professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, and talking about his latest book, Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. George, I was wondering if there are, I know you give examples in the book of, you know, hostilities and animosity and also, you know, ways that we can work together. I'm wondering if there are examples maybe where Christians or other people of goodwill have been able to unite together to preserve rights and freedoms. And do you have a word about how we can go about doing that? How can we actually preserve and avoid some of those negative stereotypes?
You know, I do think that as much as possible, we want to work with other religious groups. I think it gives us legitimacy. And so I would say that, you know, when issues of religious freedom come up for, say, Muslims or Jews or anything like that, we Christians should be at the forefront of helping them. I know that recently there was, a court case where I think it was I forget the exact details, but I think a Muslim in prison about his hair. And I was pleased to see that some of the Christian organizations had filed a brief supporting that person as far as being able to wear his hair as far as his religion. And I think that we want to create an atmosphere of religious freedom in our society. And we want that atmosphere extended to Christians as well. But I think we lose our legitimacy when we don't support religious freedom for other groups, and then we come back and ask for religious freedom for ourselves. And so as much as we can unite with other religious groups, I think we should.
You know, the thing you reference Chick-fil-A and some others in the book, you know, that obviously were attacked for their, you know, supporting traditional values of marriage. You know, as you've kind of looked at some of those, I mean, are there things that maybe business could have done differently, or, you know, church leaders could have said things differently? Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I don't know whether or not Chick-fil-A could have done a lot of things differently. You know, a lot of organizations give money to their to causes they care for. I noticed the other day on my Facebook, it came across that 51 organizations were giving money to Planned Parenthood. So I don't think Chick-fil-A was in the wrong to give money any more than other organizations are. If you want to boycott them, that's their right to do so. And so I do think, though, it sort of illustrates a sort of double standard that we might pick up on, that Chick-fil-A gave money to a group that people consider to be controversial, and we get a lot of publicity. I think today it's fair to say that Planned Parenthood is quite controversial, and yet we don't see a lot of publicity about the organizations that give money to them. I do think the more we can point out these double standards, the stronger case we can make that what we as Christians want is to be treated like everyone else. And we're not looking for more rights than anyone else, but we want to be treated like everyone else. And so don't go after a Christian group for something that you're not going to go after other groups for doing.
Now, you're talking about Planned Parenthood, obviously, just, you know, the videos that have just come out here the last couple of weeks, and theoretically more on the way about Planned Parenthood selling fetal body parts. And I just noticed an article today. There was sort of a, you know, downplaying, I guess it's from weekend news shows, but, you know, clearly this is just a, you know, kind of the old right-wing conspiracy sort of thing that, you know, this is conservatives, fundamentalists that are just trying to make a case that really, you know, we get sort of poo-pooed, right, that, well, they just have to sort of nod their head and say, you know, these are just misinformed people.
Well, I think that's another way to illustrate the sort of double standard, because we know that we see these stories quite often of a group that secretly tanks someone else, and then they get a lot of publicity. And if that's the standard that we're going to use, then all groups have to abide by that standard. And so, you know, if a Christian group takes another group doing things that are untowards and people don't like it, and if we don't want that done to other groups, then it should not be done to Christian groups as well. And so that would be my suggestion, is try to find some parallels And I think that, that makes your argument a little bit easier when you're trying to point out. I mean, people are always going to say there's differences. And, of course, some of their arguments become a little bit ridiculous. But I would say that if we could find useful parallels, that we'll be in a better position to make our case.
And we do want to be, I mean, effective, right? There's a, I guess the we don't want to exaggerate the problem, which can happen from time to time.
Right. Yeah. And I think Christians get in trouble here's an example of one where I think Christians are making too much of it. You know, the whole Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays thing. You know, unless you're being ordered to say Happy Holidays, why do we make a big deal if people want to say Happy Holidays? I think Christians make a big deal out of that, and I don't think it's a big deal.
And the more we do that, I suppose it becomes almost like a crying wolf in ways, right?
Correct, and then people don't listen to us when we really do have legitimate concerns. And so I think we have to think carefully about, you know, the issues we bring up, but there are issues that are worth bringing up.
Well, maybe we got a couple of minutes to close. I know that you've written much on race, and obviously you talk about the anti-Christian bias. Just review some of the, maybe for you as a professor at a university, what are some of the key issues that you keep coming back to and you hold on to without compromise?
Well, you know, from my position, what I try to do is, I'm a professor, and I do sociological work, and I try to do high-quality sociological work. But I'm a Christian, and then my Christian impacts how I do my work in that, the sort of issues I study, you know, the take I bring to it. And so I hope in doing so, I am able to take my faith and my work and mix them together and to be a witness in that way. It's why I study Christianophobia. It helped to shape some of my study in race and ethnicity. And I think that if we have more Christians, wherever they're at, really thinking about how they can use their Christian faith in a serious way to shape their understanding of how they do their work, I think we can have a bigger impact and we can have more influence in our society.
In general, the trajectory of maybe more short-term losses, do you think?
I think for the short term, you know, politically and socially, Christians are going to lose out. But I do think that there's reasons to believe that Christians can persevere. And, you know, actually, the typical situation for Christians throughout our history is that we're the minority group. I mean, that's more typical. What we've seen in the past, say, a couple of centuries in the United States is atypical for Christians throughout. We look at, you know, globally and throughout our history. So Christians are going to survive this. It's just a matter of, you know, are we going to come through this, or are we going to be refined or not?
Some good questions raised and some good answers provided in the book Hostile Environment. The subtitle is Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias, written by Professor George Yancey. George is a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas and has written several books, co-authored or edited books, including Compromising Scholarship, Religious and Political Bias in American Higher Education, Dehumanizing Christians, Cultural Competition in a Multicultural World, There Is No God, Atheists in America, Beyond Black and White, Beyond Racial Gridlock, and Just Don't Marry One. And the book we reference again, Hostile Environment, from University Press. You can find out, if you missed part of today's show, you can catch the podcast. We post the interviews online after each show. That's available at myfaithradio.com. And then click on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. And if you want to pass it on to a friend, it's all shareable as well. And we'd recommend that you do that and let others know about the quality programming here on Faith Radio. George, thank you so much for your study, your research, and your conversation with us today.
Thank you so much.
George Yancey joining us today on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. I invite you to stick around all week. A great lineup this week, and we'll give you an update coming up here tomorrow at noon.